this one for the homemakers. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, dance if you a homemaker. Hey, this one for the homemakers.
Hey y'all, welcome to Patriarchy Country, where we are throwing back the curtain on what life is like when you're a member of the Patriarchal Wives Club. I'm Patriarchy Hannah, as you know, and this episode, I sat down with Eric Kahn. He was kind enough to like give me some time, and we talked about some of his more controversial tweets, some of the ones that, you know, a lot of us have either discussed or that people have sent to me a lot and just been like, what is this? You know, or what does he mean by this? And we kind of talked about the Ali Bell Stuckey thing a little bit, which most of y'all know where I stand on that. And, you know, I thought it was a really good conversation. I thought it was very productive. I really appreciated it. And I think you would be willing to do it again if you guys listen and you're like, well, Hannah, like you didn't cover this or that. I mean, I don't know. I'll ask him to come back so if you want. But I did want to just kind of, I don't know, have the conversation and, you know, just see if it added a little bit of clarity to even some of the tweets that I read, you know, like the mattress tweet. Like I read it and it was like, I don't like the way this was worded, you know, and, you know, I think there's a lot of that with, you know, a lot of the ladies who would be listening to this, except for the hate listeners, obviously, shout out to them. But, you know, those of us who are, you know, regular members of Patriarchy Country, like, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't disagree with what he's saying technically, but it's like, why did he have to say it this way? Why did he have to word it this way? Couldn't he have been nicer? Couldn't he have just been less? Just less, like, you know, and, you know, maybe this will kind of like, you know, I don't know, soften some of that for us. So I was terribly ill prepared for this episode. Honestly, I didn't even have my like binder that I normally have, like my opening written out on and all of that. So I had to record this later. I will add before I, you know, read the verse that he asked me to read that, there was some audio stuff. We used his, service or program or whatever it's called to like record, which is totally fine. But when I got the audio, his was like much softer. Like I was way louder than him, which is honestly kind of funny. But, so I tried to balance it out. So it was at least mostly even. There's a couple little rough spots. As we all know, like I'm not a sound engineer. And there's also a place where we got cut off and then had to restart. I kind of tried to smooth out the transition there, but I did not do a great job. So you can definitely tell that there was like a big cut there. Yeah, but anyway, I'm not a sound engineer. I'm just a mom. So we do what we can. This is going to be 1 Timothy 5:17-21. Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages. Do not admit a charge against an elder except on the evidence of two or three witnesses. As for those who persist in sin, rebuke them in the presence of all so that the rest may stand in fear. In the presence of God and of Christ Jesus and of the elect angels, I charge you to keep these rules without prejudging, doing nothing from partiality. And, you know, a lot of what I feel like the problem is sometimes when we get into like the Eric Kahn tweets or the Brian Salve or Joel Webbin, it's so easy for myself included. I've had this issue with other people that it's so easy to forget, like this man is a pastor. And even though like, yes, this is Twitter and we like to say like, oh, Twitter's not real life. Yeah, but we're still like real people and we're still the same person held to the same standard, actually, you know, whether we're on Twitter or not. And I, you know, there's a lot of hastiness sometimes to like jump on, you know, a pastor if he says something that we don't agree with. And I've been super guilty of it. Not so much with, these guys, but with maybe other pastors that I disagree with quite a bit and stuff. And so I think it's just good to have a reminder that, you know, these are men of God, and they do deserve like a certain amount of respect, not just because they say so, but because the Bible says so. And, you know, we don't have to agree with everything that Eric says or like the way he says it, but we should probably, you know, think about the way that we respond to him online. So anyway, I thought it was a good convo. Can't wait to hear what you guys have to say. And yeah, so I'll just go ahead and play the track. Okay, well, Eric, thank you so much for, you know, agreeing to do this. I know everybody tends to ask you why you hate women. What I want,
that's right.
What I want to know is, why do you want to get the women worked up? Why do why do you enjoy this?
Yeah, that is a good question. I, you know, even when I was a kid, my mom said, she said, Eric, I think your spiritual gift is pushing people's buttons. And I think part of it is, you know, it can be helpful pastorally and rhetorically, especially when you think about, like, when you're trying to have difficult conversations that you know need to happen. One of the things that our culture is very uncomfortable with is, you know, putting things in a certain way that's not the most winsome possible. But one of the features of that, you find Jesus doing this actually quite often. He'll say something like, you know, whoever doesn't hate his mother and father and his own family. And you're like, man, I wish he would have qualified that a little more. You know, I wish he would have provided a little more explanation. But the one thing it does is it forces people to think and to have an honest conversation. It kind of ruffles your feathers to the point where what Jesus is doing, getting to your heart. So I think that's a lot of it is, you know, believe it or not, I don't just delight to see people irate, but it actually does encourage me that a lot of times that, you know, whether it's about modesty or adoption, it usually ends up being that people have to think about it. I was talking to a friend who works in Washington, D.C. Recently. Actually, this was after the modesty thing. And he said, yeah, it's crazy. The modesty, yoga pants, all that stuff blew up. And he said, I was sitting in offices with major senators in the U.S. And they're like, have you seen this modesty tweet? Do you know this guy? And I was like, well, you know, if it forces people to have the conversation, then I'm thankful for that.
You think the AOC was holding a meeting about your yoga pants?
I'm guessing it wasn't AOC, but one never knows. One never knows.
One never knows. Maybe she'll put out a dancing video about it.
Yes.
I have noticed, I saw this tweet that you put out, I mean, this is from September, I think, where you said that a large majority of conservative Christian women are crypto feminists, but don't realize it. And I use people's reactions to your tweets as a kind of way to sift out which of my Twitter mutuals, many of whom I still like and care about, have a ton of what I call internalized feminism. That's just kind of been, you know, taught to them their whole lives. We all have it to a degree. Because even if they don't agree with the tweet, if I can talk to them in like a rational way about it, then it's like, okay. But if they're just mad or just, you know, won't hear reason, then it's like, yeah, okay. You're a feminist. You're full of feminism. So I find them helpful in that way. Because then I kind of know where everyone stands. Generally speaking, things fall into a patriarchal versus complementarian camp with these women. And it's normally like a pretty clean line. And I, you know, that's another interesting thing to me. But how much of the problems that are going on in the church do you think really... it really is about like how much feminism there is?
Yeah, it's a great question. I do think a lot of it, you know, recently I was reading Nancy Piercy's book. I had her on the show and it was a really good interview. But one of the things I noticed in her book, it's like on the war against masculinity, toxic masculinity. She's actually trying to defend the Christian position. But one of the things I really noticed in there is she'll say things like, she'll kind of refer to herself or complementarians as patriarchalists. But she even admits in the book that most of this is kind of in name only. In functional everyday practice, everyone that, you know, she was kind of referring to that has happy marriages, they all act like egalitarians. They share roles. The husband's headship is like a, you know, one of those fire extinguisher in the glass, like breaking case of emergency. Only in rare circumstances does the husband ever exercise his headship. And it's like, maybe, you know, most of the people I think that she refers to in the book, they said, we never actually do that. So I think that's kind of a picture of how in the church we might say we're complementarian, but even that doesn't really have legs. People don't actually practice it. They're really having marriages that are sort of bullpen by committee. Many times the wife is actually in charge. And what we found is a lot of the reason for this is actually, it's not necessarily the people's fault. They a lot of times don't know any better. They're being told that they're patriarchal or complementarian when functionally they're not. So where we've really seen this and where a lot of actually my tweets come from is pastoral ministry. So people will come to the church and they say, hey, yeah, we're on board with what you teach about patriarchy. Well, that's all good and well until you have to counsel people and you say, okay, you know, it might be something like you cannot speak to your husband that way. Like if you really believe he's the head, you know, you can't tell him to pound sand. I'm not listening to you, you know. And so in counseling, they're like, oh, okay, you're right. I need to have a gentle and quiet spirit. And this is a really good application for it in a situational application. The problem becomes, though, is that when the church doesn't preach on these things at all, and usually in my life when I've heard even complementarian guys preach, it's usually they're apologizing. Now, ladies, I know this is going to be hard for you to hear, but now, there is headship. But just listen, it's servant leadership. You know, don't go crazy. It's so he has headship so he can serve you. And he's really, you know, your pool boy and your errand boy. So they're trying to soften the message. And I do think a lot of it has to do with, look, the church in America is predominantly female in attendance. It's run by men still largely. But I think a lot of guys have figured out, you know, if I can play to the women and soften the message for the women, then it's probably going to go a lot better for me as a pastor. Of course, you can read older guys. Like recently, I've been reading William Googe, who's a Puritan, Westminster Divine. But his word on the family, he'll say things like, wives, you're called to submit to and obey your husband. And he says, your obedience in the home is what your children are going to follow. So make sure that you model obedience to your husband so that the children are obedient. Well, I mean, you can imagine that in a church today. It would not go well in most churches. Simply, again, this goes back to we're in this state because the pastors in the church have not taught on it for so long.
Yes. And what you were talking about with, you know, because I listened to your episode about Nancy Piercy and, you know, the kind of using like patriarchal and complementarian interchangeably. So the church I grew up in church, my husband didn't. You know, he got saved as an adult. But before we got married, our marriage has pretty much always been the way it is. And that's what I thought that complementarian was. Now, I would have told you until like 5 years ago, probably, that we were complementarian. But then we moved back from somewhere else, started going to the church I grew up in. And the ladies got very upset that he said that I couldn't go on a women's retreat. And that kind of just like all hell broke loose for a couple of years after that until we finally just had to go. But I didn't know that there was like a third option. And I thought that this was how all complementarian relations, I thought this is what marriage was supposed to be. And so it was very like a little startling, I guess, to realize that like all these women that I thought actually believed in like male headship, I thought they believed what they said they believed, I guess. And then finding out that they didn't, they were like, he's controlling. And my husband's very, he's very short on words. The way he says it is like, he doesn't like to waste words. And so kind of very to the point, he'll say things like, you know, I'm not controlling, I'm in control. This is my house, you know? Yeah. And then that does, I'm sure you can imagine, doesn't go over very well. And and so it was really like eye opening. And then I got on Twitter
And I was like, oh, whoa, like these women, there really are just like a lot of, there's a lot of confusion about what a patriarchal marriage or like what a biblical marriage, I would say, like really actually looks like. And the effect that that has, trying to think of like what the way that it has seemed to have like rippled through like everything else of, you know, with the, now you've got some churches that are like gay affirming and all of the, you know, you've got the kind of the egalitarian pastor saying, was that guy like Zach Lambert, you know, saying like weird, you know, they just kind of, you know, like, how it's do like you
not sinful to be gay?
Right. Right. And then also he blocked me because I quote tweeted him because he's, he said he wanted to be alone with women. And I was like, that's creepy. Like that's, I oh, would man. Not in a counseling way. Right. But it's just like, that's weird. And so, and it's hard for me, like, to see an argument where you can't say, like, the gotta gay stuff and the soft on abortion stuff. How can you say that doesn't start with, like, it almost always seems to start with a little bit of feminism.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, even with the trajectory of people, that's something, you know, you can watch over the long haul, the fruit of people's lives long term. And yeah, I think just when feminism invades, what's the net result? What's the net result for denominations? Well, things usually fall apart. You know, the PCUSA, all the liberal denominations are largely dying. Even in our town, you know, the buildings that are up for sale are PCUSA and you know, the leftist evangelical Lutherans and stuff like that. So it'll rot a church. It'll rot a marriage. The weird thing for me, and, you know, I go back to pastoral counseling, but people will come in sort of egalitarian functionally, even if they're complementarian on paper, doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know, what do you actually do in practice? But they come in, we give them biblical counsel. And when people submit themselves to it, the number one thing I hear afterwards is, we're so much happier now. Like, it seemed like it was such a bad thing to submit to my husband and for my husband to step up and lead well, you know, spiritually, economically, otherwise. And yet here we are, like, I'm happier. I will always tell people, you know, we've gone through periods in our marriage where, you know, the ladies will in counseling will ask, well, you know, if I, as a wife, I'm being emotionally out of control, like I need my husband to make me tea and allow me to vent. And how do you handle your wife as a, you know, a dirty patriarchalist? And I'll say, oh, you know, I'm very loving and ironic. But I said to my wife, I said, you need to stop. You may not continue to do this. You need to control your emotions. And here's what we're going to do. And, you know, they're like aghast at that. And I'm like, no, my wife is thankful for it. And she said over time that she said that the best thing for controlling my worry was I bring them to my husband, who's my head, and he will pray for me and talk to me, but essentially say, like, you may not worry about this. Here's what we're going to do. I have it under control. Here's the other things I need you to focus on. And she's like, it's amazing how much that has helped me as a wife. Anyway, then the people will start practicing it. And lo and behold, like I said, generally they're happier. A lot of times they'll even say, like, man, I can't believe that, you know, patriarchy, I was told it was this evil, evil thing. I'm like, well, if you think about it, a woman is made to be under headship, either her father or her husband. And so when she's not, like, anxieties will run amok. She's actually not made to rule. And so, you know, once you put her in the position that God wanted her to be in and designed her for, yeah, of course she's going to flourish and be happy.
Yeah, and it really is so much easier. I don't want to get too much in the weeds on the marriage stuff, but our marriage is like very, it's very easy and very, my life is pretty chill. Because like you were saying, your wife says, when I bring like a complaint or a problem, whatever, to my husband, then it's like not for me anymore. You know, yes. And so he'll either give me a solution or say, hey, I'll take care of it. And then I move on with my life. Like, how could you not want that? And a lot of the times when I talk to women about it, the whole way that Patriarchy Hannah even came about was because I just posted like one thing and realized like these people don't have any idea what the day to day would look like. They just picture my husband just like, I don't know, stomping through and, you know, yelling at everybody or something. It's like not like that. And then I started doing these political spaces with a friend of ours, on Twitter, and a lot of the conservative women in there, when I would say, like, oh, well, I don't really know that women should vote. Like, maybe we don't need universal suffrage and stuff like that. And they would say, well, what's the answer to all these problems that, feminism was a response to? And I would say, better patriarchy. And so, like,
Yes.
and then they, so patriarchy, Hannah, kind of came from that. But the question I get the most often is, what happens if he doesn't take care of me, essentially? And it's like, well, this is a trust issue, though. Like, why wouldn't he want to?
Yeah.
Outside of like a traumatic brain injury, your husband's probably not going to just become like a totally different person after 20 years of marriage. So if he
Yeah.
cares about your needs now, why would he not care about them if you change the way you do things a little bit,
Yes. Yeah, I think a big part of it too is, it's one reason we encourage fathers with young daughters. Like, well, that's why that decision who you marry really matters. Because we do see that a lot of times there's, women or men, it can go both ways, but maybe you make a bad choice. And then so there are some frustrating things that you're going to have to deal with along the way. But, this is really what Peter addresses as well. The whole thing about being gentle and quiet in spirit is specifically if you're married to an unbeliever, because that is reality. Even in the early church, that was a reality that you could be put in this position. And, 1 Peter 4, keep entrusting your soul to a faithful creator while doing good. You have to trust as a woman that God is taking care of you, that he's going to work through your husband. And, especially, people always point to abuse as a big issue. I think more common than not, though, when I hear ladies complaining about stuff like that, acting out of fear, like my husband won't take care of me, usually the issues are things like small. It's not like an overt sin issue. It's like, well, I really wish he would pray with me more, or I really wish this. So, I've reverted to nagging or, whatever. And you're like, well, Pastor Brian has said this frequently from the pulpit, and I find it really helpful because they're the ditches that men and women fall into. If you're a husband, being angry at your wife is not going to bring her to repentance, right? And this is why scripture regularly warns us as husbands not to be harsh with our wives, but to live with them in an understanding way. Vice versa, with women, you're not going to be able to nag your husband into the path of obedience. That's not how God has ordained things and structured nature. But you can be gentle and quiet, pray for him. And Peter says, win him without a word. So yeah, a big part of it is, if you don't trust your husband, okay, maybe there were bad choices along the way. But more than likely, I think a lot of times it reflects a lack of trust in the Lord and the structure. And so yeah, ladies and men, but ladies need to be encouraged in that, trust the Lord, keep entrusting your soul to him, and follow the path of obedience, and the Lord will provide and take care of you as well.
And don't let her read, right? That is your official position.
That's right. Yeah, Joel Webbin got in trouble for that for the reading post. And it's funny because I always tell people this. So my wife teaches at a classical Christian school. She spent years homeschooling, and then as the boys got older and we moved, we had the opportunity to be a part of the school, and she had the opportunity to teach, and so she's teaching some of our sons there as well. But it really is, it's laughable because I look at my wife and she's as well read, or maybe in some areas more well read than I am. And yet, even in that, we talk. She's very submissive to my leadership. So she's not, she's constantly like, hey, I wasn't sure about this thing that we were reading in class. Like, what should I be teaching here? I want to lean on you for this. And that's because of a genuine trust, right? It's not because I've, laid down the law. But at the same time, I'm also, I'm very conscientious. Like, what are you reading? No, we're not going to read that book. I don't think that would be helpful. Things that our culture would say, oh, this is so controlling. Well, no, I mean, wise fathers should do that. If you saw your son reading like some terrible material, you would, if you love them, you would step in and say, no, that's not good. Here, let me give you some better material. So we're always talking through stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, my wife is reading Plato and the Republic, and all this stuff. And again, we'll talk through it and parse it out and make sure that, you know, we're on the same page. But, you know, the idea that women are supposed to be at home and dumb is pretty silly.
Yeah, I always like to surprise the egalitarians with the fact that my husband forced me to go get my master's degree and paid for it, because I actually really didn't want to. And then they don't quite know what to think. But speaking of college, though, another one of your tweets that really got some people a little upset is the mattress tweet, where you said, many Christian fathers will pay big money to send their girls to college where they become a well-used mattress with a drinking problem. The same fathers will spend little to no effort helping their daughters find a godly husband. This is absurd.
Mm.
So
yeah, what a good tweet. Wow.
I thought it was a good tweet. But, you know, I don't think you could deny it's a bit harshly worded, right? You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because the tweet originally, so I was out, I was hunting, and I was listening to Dan and Brian had recorded a podcast on the King's Hall. And I was listening to that about fathers guiding their kids and specifically their daughters. And Brian had made a comment using the used mattress language. And I thought, wow, that's really good. I'm going to tweet that. And then when I got back, you know, it had kind of blown up, and Dan said to me, he's like, Eric, you misquoted Brian. He said a used hotel mattress, not just a used mattress. And I was like, oh, well, thanks for the correction. But yeah, I mean, and some of that, it intentionally is supposed to be somewhat provocative, particularly for provoking fathers, right? It's aimed at fathers. And a lot of it is what I've seen in a lot of like conservative movement where, you know, guys are, you know, picture the dad. Dad listens to Rush Limbaugh all day. Now he listens to Mark Levin. He listens to Sean Hannity. They're like pseudo conservatives, you know, in many ways. Maybe they go to church some, maybe they don't. They pay big money to send their daughters to school. She basically goes there and becomes promiscuous and turns into a leftist and comes back, you know, talking about how good BLM is. And the dads are like, how did this happen? And so part of the being provocative in that sense is to get dads among all other people to think, why would you do that? Does that make sense? So sometimes, yeah, putting it on the nose to cause people to think. And ultimately, look, we want to provoke fathers into obedience. One of the things that we're encouraged in Hebrews, it says to spur one another on to love and good works. And the word there for spur is actually to be a thorn in somebody's flesh. So there is a time to exhort in such a way that, like, you know, here's Eric or Brian on Twitter being that thorn in people's side. Like, oh, you know, why did you have to be a thorn? Couldn't you have been like a cup of honey or something like that? And there's a time and place for that as well. But yeah, you know, it was another one where it's like, yeah, I do actually want people in our movement to think more critically about why they're doing that. And, you know, what education are they getting in college, et cetera. The daughter's leaving. She's not under her father's headship generally when she's there. And I've also seen it, you know, in a lot of, when I was in corporate America, a lot of coworkers who were females, their daughters would just kind of set them loose on the world and be like, good luck. And then you'd watch those women get, you know, invested in college, career, and, you know, they would have a really high body count and it was really sad. And then they'd get to like 35 to 40 and they'd be like, no man wants to marry me. And I'm beyond childbearing years, and I feel like that was a really bad thing. So seeing that, it's like I want people to think enough to, you know, potentially examine it and pursue the righteous path, motherhood.
Yeah, it is. So when I read this tweet, I think you saw the post I wrote where I wrote this whole thing where I was like, I didn't like the way this was worded, but like I kind of had to realize like this wasn't for me. You know, it like, I'm not a father, you know, this wasn't actually directed towards me. And I've listened to enough of your stuff. You know, we've got all these boys, we listen to Hardman all the time. Like I don't question whether or not you respect women, like, because I can tell by the things that you guys say that you do. So it's like, okay, he's not really calling women use mattresses exactly, like just move on. Okay. So it had sparked a conversation in my house. I was raised by my older brother. It's like a long story there. And Him and my husband have known each other for quite a while, although they weren't close, until after we got married. And it just kind of sparked this conversation. We're from probably what you would call the wrong side of the tracks. And my brother, who's, you know, he's 17 years older than me. He had three kids by the time he got me and some of my siblings around my age when I was five, you know, and he basically just said, I don't know what's wrong with like white dads, but they're dumb. They just live in this cotton candy world and don't some of the things. Now, my brother's not a Christian. He's an atheist. He just doesn't care about any of that. Although he did send us to church a lot because he wanted us to learn how to act. But, you know, when I talk about like, I wasn't allowed to leave. We lived in a really rough neighborhood. I wasn't allowed to like leave the house by myself. Until I got like dropped off at my college dorm. I don't think I left by myself. Like my brothers around my age were like, we were expected to hang out together, you know? And a lot of that had to do with the, you know, him being really worried that I was going to get pregnant or that some guy was going to charm me. Who knows? I mean, we had all the ingredients for, you know, a girl with a lot of daddy issues. And he just was always amazed. He talked about how amazed he always was at my female friends growing up and in college and how uninvolved their fathers were and how they just did not seem to actually understand how potentially dangerous the world could be for a woman or for like a young lady. And, you know, he's probably more aware of that than most people because of where we grew up and how we grew up. But it is, that is like a real thing. It's, you know, when I think of how I grew up and how he, I mean, he was like very, very protective and like really strict, not just with me, with the boys too, but like particularly with me. And what is that? Like, why do all of these fathers live in this, like, is this just from like living in a soft world or have we like lost touch with like the reality of like life?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is, you know, with the rise of feminism in the 60s, particularly, right, the sexual revolution, that's a big push. But also the abdication of men is going on simultaneously. Like you can't have feminism rise without men for at least a century really abdicating their role as fathers. And I think so part of that is – you know, this is kind of the generation of boomers that, you know, most of the fathers I knew were somewhat like this, where kind of mom ran the show. She was sort of she's the one that would go to the PTA meetings and be involved in the kids' education. And dad was just kind of like, whatever. I haven't watched the whole show, but I think on a plane, I watched like episode one of Mad Men. And, you know, at that point, I was like, I can't watch the show. But it was really interesting. And like episode one, John Hamm's character is like this husband who's like philandering. He'll come home and his wife's like, hey, I'm having these issues, like physical issues. Maybe I'm sick. And he's like, oh yeah, whatever. Just go to the psychiatrist, go to the doctor, give him whatever. And then she comes back with all this like psychobabble, right? And all this feminism. And he's just kind of like, yeah, whatever, do your thing. I'm mainly focused on work and my life there. I think that's somewhat stereotypical, but true. Sort of a true cliche of what happened to men in general. And I think also it's just the disordering of priorities that was going on and largely even in conservative movements, right? Where, again, guys would listen to Rush Limbaugh. They'd be super irate about, I can't believe the liberals. I can't believe the Democrats. But they were, no one was challenging them to be like, go home and fix your household, you know? And then I think the church also, there's this shift culturally to things that are seen as more acceptable as focal points for the church. So social, you know, sort of social gospel stuff and less on personal piety in the household. That stuff has sort of gone out the window. And again, so as you have no teaching on that, I think many fathers were just completely oblivious to the sort of issues they should be looking out for their children. And certainly with the rise of feminism, I think men definitely imbibed and fathers imbibed this sort of teaching that, you know, I saw in response to that tweet, like, my daughter is going to do whatever she wants and I'm proud of her because she's her own person and I would never interfere in her life in that way. I'm like, well, you know, my fundamental point is that's not loving your daughter. You know, if you love your daughter, you're going to protect her. You're going to point her toward marriage. You want to protect her from, really, honestly, let's be real, a bunch of sexual perverts. You know, I always think that when you have men and pastors who are like, no, women should be allowed to be promiscuous. And then I'd be like, the ladies, I want to say to them, why do you think those guys are saying that? Like, who benefits from you being promiscuous? They do, you know? And so I think that's part of it. Oblivion, poor teaching in the church. I think a lot of us, you know, if you didn't have like a good father example, then, you know, maybe you have no clue about what fathers are even supposed to be doing. And then against the backdrop of a feminist culture, you know, you're definitely not told that you should in any way be instructing your daughter in those things.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it also just comes from this, like, idea. You see it in, like, the Marvel movies or, like, the female superhero idea, like the idea that a woman can defend herself or, you know, that there's... I've had people argue with me that the world is not inherently more dangerous for women than men. I think it depends on, like, what, you know, what you're looking, like, what metric are you using to judge that? But, you know, I'm probably not, I'm 5'1", I weigh 100 pounds. I'm probably not going to be, like, fighting off a grown man if he's attacking me. That's why my brother taught me how to shoot a gun. You know, and when I was young, I think, and somebody invited me to, like, a self-defense class, and my brother was like, I'm not paying for that. That's stupid. Like, that's not going to help her. And he took me to the shooting range instead, you know? But I guess, like, this, I don't know, this idea that, like, women can defend themselves or something. I don't know. It's interesting, though. My childhood was drastically different than, like, most people's, so it's not a great judge, but it is, or a great measure, a metric, but it's interesting to see some of these, like, attitudes that people have about stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So your homeschooling tweets, though, they get people very worked up too, because not only are you saying women shouldn't go to college, now you're also saying that they're not equipped to, like, homeschool their own children. According to, you know, this is how it's, like, often interpreted. Yeah. You had said one of the inherent problems with homeschooling is that it virtually always amounts to mom dominant schooling, which is fine for younger years or girls, but older sons need to be taught by men.
Yeah.
So do you want to explain what you meant by that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So a lot of this, again, from personal experience. So we had homeschooled for a long time. And one of the things that I saw happening, you know, you'd go to homeschool co-ops, and again, like, dads were pretty absent in them. It was usually all the moms who were dealing with curriculum. This was even true in my own case, you know, to my shame. My wife would talk to me about curriculum. I'd say, yeah, that's fine. But I was focused on work. And so, yeah, I just realized, like, as my boys got older, especially into the teen years, I would listen to them go back and forth with their mom all day. And I was talking to an older pastor who said, well, you know, homeschooling is great and it's fine. But one of the issues you have to consider is that in you know, pre, like, 1900, especially public education, by the time a boy was 14, especially, he would have been almost predominantly working with dad in some capacity. He'd be entering a man's world. And so as I was reflecting on this, I was like, yeah, you know, my boys are becoming men. And so, we did continue homeschooling at that point, but I was like, I need to make a more intentional effort to have male voices in their life. They need to understand what it means to come under male authority. And so we did a couple things. You know, we got our boys involved with some guys who were sort of doing apprentice work with welding and stuff like that. And one of my sons is really into forging. So he started doing that. And that was a good way to just include the male voices and male teachers, that sort of thing. One of the pastors volunteered to teach math. And so that was really good for the boys, just to have a different, you know, the male, even physiology has a different bearing on the way that, you know, broader shoulders, deeper voice, all that, how it affects young boys. And once that happened, I could start to see the change in boys. And, you know, eventually, well, we did, you know, moved to a place where we had a classical Christian school with male teachers in the older forms. The younger forms still have female teachers. But I noticed that too. You know, we have former Air Force guys who are, you know, teaching the boys, and you could just see a marked difference. Like, they'll handle boys differently. And so that was really a good thing. Just from watching that, I you know, was reflecting on it and then made that tweet. And, you know, there's another one too, where it's like, people think that our church is all like private Christian education, which it's not. We have a large group of homeschoolers. Moms are very involved there as well, but so are dads. And so if anything, I think, you know, what it's meant to be is an encouragement that moms just not be too much of a dominant voice, and that fathers really take an active role in the education. Even Vodi Bakum has talked about this, like, as they get into the teen years, they really need a lot more dad time. And so even if you homeschool, you know, just an encouragement to make sure that they have plenty of interaction and coming under the authority and working alongside men.
Yeah, Michael Foster put out like a very similar tweet just like a couple of days ago that didn't seem to get quite the rage. That yes. I don't know if this, the homeschooling tweet, if it got quite the Twitter rage, but a lot of people said it to me in like bat channels, and you know, for people think that we know you. I don't know why, but I get asked about your wife like all the time, and I'm like, I'm sure she's lovely, but I don't know Eric's wife. Yes. You know, but it's like, yeah, this makes sense though. It's my husband, you know, owns a business. We homeschool with some of my brothers, his brothers. When the boys get older, like, they go work in family businesses. You know, and I'm still in charge of all of their academic learning, but they spend most of the days like with their uncles, with their dad. And I don't know how our house would work efficiently a different way. We have a different situation because they're all adopted, but it's, I don't know. That just makes sense though. This, you know, that as men get, you know, young men get older, they need to spend more time being poured into by older men, you know?
Yeah. Well, and this was pretty common knowledge too. I mean, Nancy Piercy has covered this, I think, in her book, Total Truth. We talked about it on the episode that I did with her. Chris Wiley's talked about it. Just the change in the Industrial Revolution that really kind of divided homes. So it's also part of that bigger narrative that, you know, as people have come away from the homes, we just need to find creative ways to make sure that, A, we're still being productive as families, but that, you know, dad has a relationship with the kids and it's meaningful and productive as well. So I think, you know, just pointing out some of those things. For the most part, though, I will say, you know, a lot of people take things wrong on Twitter or misunderstand tweets. And it's for a couple reasons, right? A, some people come and they're like, Eric, I hate your face. Before I even read the tweet, I hate your face. Okay, so there's some of that. But genuinely, too, like, I always remind people, like, Twitter is 120 or something characters like that. Like, people are like, well, why didn't you provide every exception, nuance, and explanation that you could? And a lot of it does come down to that. It's like, well, it is Twitter. I mean, I think their whole platform is built around being short and pithy, and they're looking for engagement. Like, that's really what they reward. So, you know, it's also understandable. I am understanding with people, and that's why I try to genuinely, like, you have to discern, like, who actually wants to learn from this, but you do have to ironically engage with people and answer questions and that sort of thing, which usually by the end of the conversation, a lot of people will come around to if you have a chance to talk with them about it.
Yeah, it's – so I feel like on Twitter, there's a balance that has to be found. And one of my favorite things that people will say to me about you is, like, all he ever does is talk to women. And it's like,
yeah,
but he's got whole podcasts about men. You know, that right. Which I've listened to them all, and like, they are for men. Like, they're not for women. And so, and a lot of them are like, hey, we have to be doing this better. There's a lot of that. And so it's like, yeah, but this, you know, this is Twitter. And so he's talking to like a more mixed audience. And women just, it seems like the direct speech is like a big problem. It's the problem I run into a lot of times when I'm talking to women, because I grew up in a very male dominated home and developed a much more direct way of speaking in general than like I think most women have. And a lot of times I make people mad without even realizing it. And partially,
well, that was even a change. Yeah, that was a change that I kind of, you know, I heard some of that criticism too about you're always talking to women. So even with the last couple of tweets, I addressed them to fathers, but they seem to blow up even more. So I don't know if it necessarily changed anything. But
yeah, that may not be honest criticism then.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and I do think one of the things I've said in I've talked about in spaces some is like, if we want a healthier country, we have to get healthier men. Like healthier young right. men specifically. When you look at the numbers, like Gen Z, they're like less likely to, I think there's a chart going around Twitter today. They're like less likely to identify as a feminist. And it's like, that's good. You know, and things like that, the younger men, like they're honestly like so tired of a lot of this stuff in just in talking to them, but then they don't have, they don't have a lot of places to get poured into from, you know, a lot of the young men I interact with, they go to church, but they're not that impressed with their churches. They don't, you know, it may not be like what they want. There's some of them are kind of a little black pilled. And a lot of the, one of the things I've told some of the women, like in my Discord is like, I'm not going to publicly disagree with Eric or Brian unless I'm just asking a question. I'm just not going to, because like, I think the men need this, even if I don't like the tweet. And even if I don't agree with the tweet, I don't want my sons are not on Twitter, but like, I don't want the other young men to just see these guys just getting pummeled all the time. And it's like, if you know, I just don't think it's helpful. And maybe we should think about the way that like these things are perceived. Like, are, if we say we want stronger men, are we actually acting like we want stronger men? If we are constantly like yelling at Eric Kahn for saying something direct and true, you know? And you know, generally speaking, they're like, okay, well, I don't like it, but I guess, you know, whatever. And because, you know, patriarchal white privilege, I just say, well, this is what my husband told me to do. And so, you know, yeah,
that's right.
And then I'm done that's with right. it. But, you know, what do you think about that? Like, it's, are we kind of almost making it worse, the women, whenever we get so worked up about it and, you know, start yelling at you? Like, what would be like a healthy way for a woman to come to you and say, what's up with this tweet?
Yeah, well, I think even, you know, I remember your interaction on the adoption tweet was probably a good example of like, hey, you know, I have some questions or maybe some issues with this tweet. Let me ask them. And, you know, we've had engagement on with each other on Twitter as well. So I know where you're coming from. And, you know, in that situation, it's like, yeah, absolutely. I want to answer questions and be a reasonable person. I think a lot of times one thing Brian always says, outrage and anger are easy for other people to manipulate you with. And so don't be the kind of person that's easily manipulated. So when, and I go through this all the time. It's like, yeah, I read a post from somebody I don't like and I'm immediately like, oh, I'm going to go blast them or make a meme or I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And a lot of times what I want to do is say, no, if I'm going to have some form of anger or outrage, I want to be in full control of that, right? I want to be the one to decide if I'm going to, you know, unleash some emotion or whatever it is toward a certain post. So I think that's part of it, is realizing that people are often manipulating you. I think that part of it is our world is just that that's the way media works, right? The more outraged people get, the more clicks and engagement and stuff that, so there are a lot of people out there who are manipulating you. And I think also just in general, having, this is like so countercultural, right? But like, maybe if you want to get outraged, the first thing you should do is just like talk to your husband, talk to your pastor, see what they think, right? Hopefully your husband can be like, well, you know, in this case, you know, here's some things to consider. Some of the things may be right. Maybe you should ask a question. Maybe you should not, you know, rage tweet right away. And I've been guilty of this before too, right? Where you snap at somebody and then they explain it and you go, oh, okay, well, it's not so bad. This kind of goes back to the Proverbs, like the first person to air their side of the story seems right until you hear the other side. So there's been a lot of stuff on Twitter where I've actually tried to engage people. If they have, you know, DMs open, I might send them a note and say, hey, brother, I have a question here, you know. So that's part of it, is just being more self-controlled and disciplined to say that. And then I think also, like we've said to our ladies here, like, you're not to be arguing with men on Twitter. And I wouldn't count asking questions as being argumentative. But a lot of the engagement that we get from women is like, there was a whole host after the adoption tweet of like the pseudo patriarchy gals who one in particular, like she screenshotted me, blocked me. And then in the comments, you know, I have other accounts that I can look at that post from. So I looked at it and it was like, you know, all the ladies are like, oh, he's a heretic. He's clearly not a Christian. And then what I would say, if I'm a husband, if that was my wife saying those things, I say, babe, listen, you're not the body that ordained him. You're not his pastor. You are not to be making judgments on who is and is not a heretic. Someone is not, I mean, even by church, like church law, someone is not a heretic because they hold a different view on adoption than you. That does not make a person an unorthodox heretic. So heresy actually has a pretty specific definition, right? Not holding the orthodox creedal confessions of the church. So I think it's stuff like that where it's like, as ladies, it's a bad look to be out there lobbying claims like somebody's a heretic because they disagreed with you on whether it's homeschooling or adoption or maybe wording on a tweet about, you know, women's promiscuity. So, and a lot of it is like using proper channels and being respectful. I know most of the ladies on Twitter are not going to hear that, right? And that's fine. But I do think, you know, in general, like our culture doesn't have a very high regard for authority in general. And so one of the things we're trying to restore is like, you know, again, ladies, be respectful. And there is a way to, you know, properly, a right channel to properly voice concern, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would agree. I saw a couple of those posts with the screenshots and the always a heretic. And I kind of read them and I think, man, I would like not have a phone if my husband saw me on Twitter, like saying these things. But I've found myself in the past arguing with men and having to realize, like, you know, maybe what I'm doing is not exactly wrong, but I just probably shouldn't be doing it. You know,
yeah.
Sorry, that's my dog. Like, even if what I'm saying is like true or whatever, like this just, you know, and so I kind of, I'll jokingly like tag in some of my like male mutuals and be like, okay, well, I'm gonna leave you to it now. Yeah. I'm just not gonna continue this. But it's one of the things about, because I've had this conversation about like, well, you know, like if you go respectfully, you know, it's, and a lot of the answer that I get is like, well, I'm called to submit to my husband. I'm called to submit to my church elders. Like, Eric, it's neither. So I don't have to do that. And my general answer is like, okay, well, he is a pastor. And also, no one wants to have a conversation with you if you're not going to be, you know, minimally respectful, at least, you know? Mm. But so there's that. But what would your response be when you say, like, you know, what one of the things that we're trying to like remind people of is that there's authority and that women should be respectful.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And then that's exactly the point is, again, there's a way to respectfully disagree. But I think if a lot of women, particularly in what I call like the pseudo patriarchy gal camp, I think there's a lot of ladies, you know, I've heard some of the backstories and it's like they're divorced or their husband left them or they're single moms. They've had a lot of frustration in their lives. And so I think some of it is also coming from those places. But then predominantly it's like God has not appointed you to a role of being like the watchdog of the church. And this is probably where I've drawn some of my most, I guess, heated ire from within the camp. Is this is why I think, while I don't disagree with everything they say, but somebody like Ali Beth Stuckey or, you know, different camp, but Julie Roys, these women view themselves as like the watchdog of the church. And so what they end up being is in a position of declaring who is a just or righteous or, you know, faithful pastor. And I think, wow, for the ladies, that's really not your place. God hasn't appointed you that place to make that decision. These guys have ordaining bodies. Appeals can certainly be made to those bodies. But is it the place? I mean, sometimes it'll be like, okay, there was sexual abuse and, you know, one of these ladies is covering it. Okay, I understand. But then it really goes off the rails pretty quickly. You get into the position where these ladies are issuing like trying to issue authoritative teaching on certain subjects. It's no longer that they're just having guests, you know, who are talking about it, but they're declaring what's, you know, what's orthodox and what's not. I think that is a violation of what Paul says, that women ought not to be holding authority and teaching in the church, particularly, you know, over men, a creationally rooted command. And so, again, I would just say, you know, the irony in our church is people will always ask, where are your ladies? Where's Eric's wife and all this? Well, the truth is most of our ladies are so busy with tending children and keeping home that they actually don't have time to be online fighting these like kind of ethereal Twitter wars, you know, because they're doing real meaningful work in households.
Right.
And so it's like, well, again, it just goes back to the creational structure that God ordained. And what we're basically saying is like, that's really not your place. Most, you know, these ladies, again, just to be the watchdog of the church.
Yeah, and I actually wasn't going to bring up the Ali Buzz Stuckey thing because you had, I think you replied to me, an older reply to an older tweet, and just said, you know, I don't know, something about like, I kind of regret like speaking on this way I did or something because it just wasn't helpful.
Yeah.
But since you like opened the door, I will say, I also didn't think that anything you said in that whole thing was like that crazy. I'd never been, you know, like a regular listener of hers. And I do think there's been some content change there. But I don't know, the things you said like made sense. And then shortly after all of that, I won't fill you in on all the drama, but like shortly after that, there were a couple of things that happened to, you know, one of the ladies in our circle and, you know, between her and Ali Beth and things like that, that it was like, oh, wow, like this is kind of actually very eye opening. And a lot of it, and I launched my podcast at the same time that all of this was happening. And so I was like, well, this is a little awkward, but it's not a theology podcast. It's literally just, we just sit around and like talk about different things or whatever. And I just thought it was really interesting the female reaction of, and this is kind of, I think Twitter in general, people would say like, oh, I'm not anti Ali Beth. I think what she's trying to do with her show is actually really good, you know, and there's definitely like a place for it, but I think she's in error in a couple of areas, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's just it. I was never like a regular listener, but there's certain episodes that she's done about some of the trans stuff that I would prefer to listen to it from a Christian woman as opposed to Steven Crowder, you know?
Yeah.
Cause it's not going to be so gross. So
yeah, that's exactly right. Well, and a lot of it too, like, yeah, I remember that incident, and a lot of it was, we had brought it up. There became kind of like a public spat on it. And I guess I had resolved at the time, I was like, just, I realized it wasn't going to get solved on Twitter. And I think what was frustrating me about it, so this goes back to sometimes how the difference between men and women, generally. So like our guys in the office here will have disagreements, you know, but the old adage, like guys can get in a fight today and by the evening they're having a beer and they're friends again. I would love, like I had actually emailed Ali Beth and, you know, reached out and said, I would love to have a conversation. The problem was, she had clearly muted me. She would respond to everybody who was dishing on me, but she would never respond directly. And then when she did, she was screenshotting and cutting half my face off because she didn't want to, you know, quote unquote, give credence to a clout chaser, I think is what she said. So at that point I was like, you know what, this is unhelpful because, you know, I think the way that she was engaging with it, I was like, well, this actually highlights part of the problem, right? If you have a disagreement, let's talk about it and disagree, and we don't have to like not be friends. I'm not saying that I don't think Ali Beth is a Christian or any of those things. We have a disagreement, but we ought to be able to have disagreements and not like detonate each other. So I think that was part of it. And I also think like, I still agree with what I said, that I think some of her content is fine. A lot of it. But I think it goes into, you have to be careful when you're teaching authoritatively on scripture, like when she's kind of putting herself out there as like, I am the official authority on complementarianism, for example, which she's done. And that's the biblical position, whatever. So it's like, you know, even because people ask some pretty natural questions. Well, what about Becca Merkel and Rachel Jankovich? You know, they have teaching ministries or whatever. They do some teaching through Canon Press. And I would actually respond to that. I say, well, yeah, but they're not like teaching an exposition of Romans. Fundamentally, usually what they're doing is like Titus 2 type teaching, which I think is fine. You know, teaching. My wife took one of the courses. It was like Rachel on like how to be a good homemaker, you know, how to be hospitable. Becca's done some stuff on that and written books on how to entertain large parties of guests. So I think that fits very nicely into the Titus 2 category of older women instructing the younger ladies how to love their husbands and their children and that sort of thing. So it's not like I'm saying no women should teach anything ever, nor no theology. Definitely not. But yeah, definitely I think the core principle was, should our ladies be engaging in like cultural, polemical, really what Anthony Esselin has called basically fighting with words. You know, he called it the agon. And he's actually argued, he's a Roman Catholic, but really good stuff on this. He's actually argued that, you know, there's a reason like philosophy was seen traditionally as a man's arena, because it's sparring just with words. And so a lot of times women don't deal very well with that. They can still benefit from reading it and learning it, but it's a particularly male endeavor. So a lot of things I was espousing there is really just like classical, you know, 20 seconds ago, culturally speaking, in the grand scheme of things, that would have been a pretty normative thing to say. But I think it kind of devolved pretty quickly. And even people were trying to draw like Megan Basham into that. And Meg was great. She was like, no, I get what Eric's saying, you know. And I wasn't criticizing Megan, you know. She's a journalist. She works from home, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm trying to wade into every lady's personal situation. That's a decision like she's got to make with her pastor and her husband, you know. Her husband needs to lead her in that decision. And you know, we can disagree. But, you know, sometimes what it gets into in the Christian camp is some of these conversations truly if they're unproductive, it's like, well, it'd be a lot better if we could just sort these out personally. Unfortunately, I think in, you know, like Ali Beth's case, there was no desire for that to happen. And so it's like, well, I can't really win here. So I'll just move on. And maybe one day we'll meet and have a conversation. Hopefully it would go better.
Yeah. So when it comes to just one thing I've noticed is, you know, the women who kind of involve themselves in these kind of conversations, I generally can tell within, you know, a fairly short amount of time, whether there's actual male headship involved in their, in what they're doing, like in their show, either by the reaction. So my husband listens to every episode I put out before I put it out. You know, he asks the other women's husbands to like listen to it or at least sign off on it. You know what I mean? And then everybody's good. You know, everybody,
right.
Everybody's down with like whatever was said. And, you know, then he has an idea of like what I'm putting out there. And it's not really like a big deal. He's never told me I need to take anything out, but you know, he just kind of feels like that's probably important. And I'm not saying that that's like necessarily necessary, but a lot of times when I listen to some of these, I don't know, complementarian women podcasts or whatever you want to call them, it just becomes apparent. It's like no one, you claim male headship, but like it doesn't actually seem like it's there, because I wouldn't think that anyone's husband would want them out there acting like this.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. No, exactly. And I think that's sort of the concern too, is like, you know, it seems cliche, and I often don't say it on Twitter because it never gets taken the right way, but you do want to ask, like, well, where is your husband in this? You know, and generally the ladies who end up being a problem online, you know, think of like a Beth Moore. I don't know that I've ever even seen a picture of her husband. He's not clearly not active. I would say clearly wasn't leading in that situation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it does become, you know, problematic, especially I think when you have a celebrity status where everything kind of revolves around your personality, that can be really problematic.
I saw a post from Beth Moore where she was complaining that her husband spilled coffee or something on her Bible and said that he had never been as into like reading the Bible as she was or something.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that I can probably like dig it up for you. That's been in the last like year or so. But I was like, oh, this explains a lot. You know, Beth Moore was like the reason why I stopped going to women's Bible studies, because my can't remember which one it was that we were doing, but it's like 10 years ago now. And my husband was like, this is not good. You know,
yeah.
Like, and this is just not, doesn't seem productive at all. So we're just not going to do that anymore.
yeah.
You know, and I honestly haven't missed it. Our church now has like a ladies social group that meets every other week. And I love that like so much more than the Bible study thing, because there's just no room for error. We're just there. We're hanging out, enjoying each other's company, taking stock of like things that need to be done in the church and assigning, you know, kind of outreach type things like, you know, who's had a baby or whatever, who's going to cook for them. And it's like, this is perfect, you know, because there's just no room for anything to be messed up there. But do you think that Allie Beth has subscribed to the Pugilist so that she could listen to that episode?
I do not think so. Maybe
no comment.
Fake accounts or something. I don't know, but definitely not under her name. Okay. It was funny too, because after that, just in God's providence, people were asking me like, why would you do this? You're a monster. But like the week after that blew up, I got an email from Allie Beth Stuckey's dad. It was from her, you know, his publisher. He'd written a book, and they were like, he'd love to come on your show. And I was like, you know, honestly, I did it because I thought, okay, if I treat him respectfully and honorably, perhaps this will be sort of like an olive branch. It wasn't, at least to this point. But we had a great conversation. Definitely didn't bring up Allie Beth, wasn't dishing on that at all in the podcast. I'm sure if you heard it, you probably gathered that. But yeah, even that was kind of funny, I thought. But, you know, this is what I think a lot of people don't understand. I would love to even be able to have peaceable disagreements among Christians like that, and be able to just say, like, you know, same team. I'm not trying to destroy you. I'm not trying to dish on you, not trying to clout chase or anything like that. But just have peaceable disagreements. And it is kind of ironic, though. Like, her dad was like super nice and super friendly and a really great guy. And I thought, you know, there's part of me that thinks a lot of times if I could just, you know, if we sat down, Allie Beth and her husband and myself, it's like if we sat down and had a beer, I'm sure we could probably at least be peaceable, you know. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times, you know, it takes two people to make those work.
Yeah, I she actually blocked me because of Ben Garrett. Oh, no. So before before this was like the week before that whole thing even started, but he put out a tweet that was like, and again, I just asked for clarification. I'll just reiterate that for the ladies listening. But he put out the tweet that was like, you know, just a reminder that Folly is a loudmouth woman, and that would include Steven Crowder, Candace Owens, and Allie Beth Stuckey. And so I just said, really, Allie Beth? Like, I wouldn't put her in the same category. You know, and he kind of explained himself. And I was like, oh, but this literally was like the week before you did your whole episode about it. And so I was like primed to hear about it. You know, like my mind was open to the idea at that point. Yeah. And so,
well, it was interesting because, when all that went down, I was like, we work in the same office, and you know, I said to Ben, I was like, wow, you know, Ali Beth is not a big fan of mine now. And Ben said, oh yeah, I blocked her long ago. And I said, oh, did you get into something with her? And he goes, no, actually, like years ago, you know, my wife had listened to her a few times. He said, I listened to it. And I was like, no, we're not going to listen to that. And I said, interesting, why? And he said, well, it wasn't this thing or that, but it was mainly like, when I listened to her, I heard kind of a snarky, mouthy woman. And I just, you know, scripture says gentle and quiet spirit. And that's not something I wanted my wife to be emulating, kind of this like kind of bombastic engagement with cultural issues and you know, that. And so he's like, yeah, we're just not going to do that. And that's, I'm not a fan of that. And I thought, you know what, that's where a husband's leadership comes in. And one of the things that we've often said is like, in that camp, it's sort of the camp of, you know, Christian women can have it all. Right. You can have this really great career and be a stay-at-home mom and do a great job at both things. And I think often what it does is sets a very unrealistic expectation for our women that they like need to be out in the cultural space engaging on all these issues. It shouldn't come as a surprise, but a lot of our women actually don't want to do that. And we don't want to make them feel like they have to, or they have to have something like really snarky or sharp to say about everything. And so it's like, yeah, you know, husband can make that decision and, you know, say, we're not going to do that. I think that was pretty wise. And, you know, again, when you have these celebrity figures, you've just got to ask yourself, is like the overall trajectory and tone and all that stuff. Like, is this what I want to emulate? You know, and then yeah. Again, with your husband, you make a decision.
Well, and that was basically what he explained to me in the reply. And I just said, okay, like, you know, this is something to discuss with my husband. I'm not a regular listener, whatever. One of my mutuals actually was like, I would be interested to hear what your husband has to say, actually. Like, mm-hmm. You know, like, let me know whenever he asks. Whenever you ask, I was like, yeah, okay. And then I just came back and said, all he's said so far is that listening to another woman talk that much feels like some kind of adultery. And it was a joke, and really just meaning like, I don't want to listen to this. Like, just she blocked me because
It's interesting too, because my wife had never listened to Ali Beth, and I played the clip where she was responding to me on her show. Well, the Red Pill Trad Wife thing.
That was rough.
I just played the clip, and like 10 seconds in, my wife goes, no, I've heard all I need to hear. And I was like, wait, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, I mean, you can just tell in the tone and the snark and whatever else. She's like, I want none of it. And I was like, cool. You know, you want to see wisdom in the ladies. And most of our ladies, honestly, zero pushback from the ladies of the church. They were like, no, totally agree. Not even a question. We're not going to listen to it. You know, carry on. That was pretty much the response.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I had never really, I had always taken the stance of, you know, listen for the politics, not the theology kind of thing. But then, after the kind of like Red Pill Trad Wife episode, I was like, oh no, absolutely not. You know, because that was a little rough to listen to. But, you know, and then shortly after, there was this kind of, you know, personal issue with a close Twitter mutual of mine. And I was like, yeah, I'm done. But I did think it was funny that before all of that even popped off, I was already like blocked because my husband made this joke about the fact that she talks too much or something, you know. Funny. Anyway, I really appreciate you like agreeing to do this. I wasn't sure if you would want to come on and explain yourself. I did have one more tweet that I was going to read that you put out. And it's just this one that says, women should be well-educated, intelligent, well-read, smart, competent, etc. That's not the issue. The issue is that college does not equal the same thing as a quality education. It's usually a leftist brainwashing with a lot of sexual immorality and debt. And I just wanted to leave it on the high note that, you know, you do want your wife to be, and other women to be, you know, educated and, you know, not, you know, able to read, at least, I'm sure. And, you know, able to participate in complex thought, but in a, you know, in a biblical type way, not in a angry harpy type of, I call them screechers type of way.
No, that's exactly right. I've often described it as, you know, think more of like the mothers of Sparta, because a lot of people are like, oh, so you want your wife to be a doormat. She's not to have an opinion. She's not to be an intelligent person. And the thing is, if you're protecting her and leading her in the way that God's called you to as her head, then she ought to be growing in wisdom. And that means that, you know, again, for my wife, as she grows in wisdom and maturity, which she has so much in our lifetime, we both have, that means that she is going to be a valuable counselor. She's going to provide helpful insight. There's an old Calvin quote that I often refer to, but like he would say, the man who does not consider and listen to his wife, particularly if she's a godly woman, is a monster, right? What man who is married to a godly woman wouldn't want to know, you know, what are you seeing? What are your insights here? And my wife has been tremendously helpful to me in that. But it's also tied to the fact that you're not just sending her to say like, yeah, let a leftist educate you. Because all education is formation. That includes for our wives and for ourselves as husbands. So we want to make sure that we're under good authority and leadership of the church. I'm also under authority and making sure that it's the right kind of formation. That's really more of the issue, is what kind of education is it? I'm actually not – the same with my children. I'm not trying to say to my kids, hey, go out in the world and just find whatever's right to you. Right? That's actually a disobedience to Ephesians 6 and Deuteronomy 6. So I want to provide a Christian education, you know, for myself, for my children, for my whole family, for my wife. And then obviously as she grows in that, she's going to be, you know, like the Proverbs 31 woman, like the husband's heart trusts in her, right? She's not a dumb woman. She's able to run a household economy very well, and her arms are clothed with strength and all those things. So yeah, I think that especially – I think if people experience, like say you come to our community and you hang out with the women, I think most people would be pretty impressed that these are sharp gals. You know, they know theology while at the same time knowing how and when to lean into their husband's leadership and headship. So if you can put those two things together, yeah, it ends up being this really amazing combination where the wives are protected, the husbands are leading, and you just have this – you know, amazing family household unit that's thriving. And that really is the aim.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I encourage a lot of, you know, like when I get a lot of you know, DMs about some of the patriarchal pastors, Joel, when the women's Bible study thing was going around. And I always say, just like, why don't you just listen to Hardman, listen to King's Hall. I don't actually listen to Breitheart that much, because I've always got at least a couple of my teenage sons around, and they're like, ew, Brian just makes kissy faces. And it's like, they don't really want to hear it. You know, right. But I've heard all the Hardman at least two or three times probably. And, you know, it's like, these are obviously men who like respect and love and cherish women. And you can saying that's not for you, that's not loving someone, you know.
Yeah.
When I tell my child, like, no, you don't need to eat this rat poison, like, that is me loving them. And, you know, I'm not saying, like, maybe it's not, like, you know, exact analogy or anything, but, you know, your husband's saying, or a pastor saying, like, ladies, this is not for you. You know, like, you shouldn't be doing this, or, you know, this is not good for you, wearing the yoga pants, or, you know, dressing like a harlot at the gym. You know, that is love, you know?
Yeah.
And that is respect. That's saying, like, I don't want to see you half naked. You know, I want you to be fully clothed so that we can engage like normal people. You know, and that seems to really have like been lost. And I think that whole attitude in the conservative, you know, in the church with the women can have it all kind of thing. And a lot of it just seems to boil down to the kind of complementarian idea that like men and women are only different because women can have children.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, no, exactly.
And kind of when I frame it like that and I'm like, hey, just listen to some Hardman and like, you'll see like, this is, you know, we're really just talking to, you know, people are, there's a push to get back to like what actually is for men and is for women. Let's really talk about the differences that are pretty, you know, they're pretty expansive differences in a lot of ways. Yeah. Like we're very different creatures. And, you know, that's just what a lot of this is. A lot of times they'll come back and say like, okay, I guess he's not that bad. Now, sometimes they're like, I've listened to it all. He's awful. And it's like, okay, well, I can help you. But, you know, it is, I appreciate the kind of discord that gets brought up on Twitter, at least from like, you know, some of y'all's tweets, because it does a lot of times make for very interesting, like lady conversation in like the private Discord behind the scenes, you know,
yeah,
where people can, you know, we kind of sort some things out or whatever. And, you know, I think it's good stuff. I think it's good stuff. My husband tweeted out the other day, we're a pro con house. And
I love it,
which was my joke first. I just want that to go on record, but you know, but that's awesome. You know, kind of where we are. So, and thank you, I'll thank you again so much. I just have to read Tony's like disclaimer, because I texted him that you wanted to put this on Patreon, and he was like, just make sure he's got my disclaimer. So
perfect.
Before we go, I'll just remind everyone listening that all of the thoughts and opinions expressed here belong to the person who spoke them and or their husband. But as with everything in patriarchy country, this episode has been husband approved. So you can direct any of your complaints or misgivings straight to the man himself. Tony is at What's Good It's Tea on Twitter. He joined specifically for this reason. So feel free to direct any of your misgivings to him and he will engage with you. But
oh man, that is the best.
I
need to get one of those. Tony, I'm stealing it.
I'll send you a copy. Yeah, you can have it.
Perfect.
So thank you so much, Eric. This was like a great conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. Hey, this is for the homemakers. Hey, this is for the homemakers. Hey, dance if you a homemaker. Hey, this is for the homemakers. 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 This is for the homemakers.